If what you want is real, Relevant Hunting, you are in the right place. With moderator Josh Miller, owner of Triple Point Outdoors, co-host Kevin Cook, owner of the Outdoor Pro Shop, and Brian Keitlinger, athlete and creator of Left in the Field Outdoors. Welcome to the Reinvent the Hunt podcast.
Well, welcome everybody to episode 10 already of the Reinvent the Hunt podcast. We have our usual hosts on, Brian from Left in the Field Outdoors with PA. He was low riding a little bit ago. And we've got Kevin Cook from the Outdoor Pro Shop down there in Maryland ready to roll tonight too. Welcome, guys. Our guest tonight is Jeff Stitzline from Mountain, Ohio. And we can't wait to have him on the episode here. We're going to talk about his crazy hunt this year. And to be honest, I have not heard a lot about this hunt. And I saw the videos and the pictures, or I know a lot of videos, but I saw pictures all over the place. There seemed to be a lot of interest in this deer when you harvested it. And so I can't wait. I'm sure the guys are excited too to hear the story, because you know, every deer has a story, and it's going to be exciting to have you on here, Jeff, tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know we've had some pretty cool weather here in Ohio. It's like April 24th right now. And I want to start by thanking everybody for 4,000 downloads of the Reinvent the Hunt podcast. It's been awesome to have people out there listening. And also the views on YouTube has been, you know, just a lot of fun to do. And I know all three of us here as hosts have been enjoying our time talking with everybody and having people on, and just us learning too a lot about hunting and lifestyle, and also, you know, getting it out there to people who may not be hunters to get people interested in the sport. So it's really awesome to have people like yourself on, Jeff, just to learn more about your story and why you started hunting and kind of what led up to this. I'm going to let you kind of take it over here.
I started out hunting probably like most of other people did. My dad, he hunted when he was growing up, and he got me into it as a kid. And then from there, my passion just grew. And like I've started, my boy, he's taking a big interest in it. He's only 7 now, so... But yeah, that's how I got started, and it was my dad.
That's really awesome. I was excited this last weekend. My own son, you know, he's done some deer hunting with me, but he wants to do turkey hunting this next weekend. He actually came up to me. I was shocked. He usually doesn't come up and ask. And he goes, "Hey, Dad," he's like, "can we take the crossbow and go turkey hunting next weekend?" I said, "Heck yeah, I've been slacking and behind. I haven't been out yet. So I got to pop a blind up and get on these birds, because it's kind of cool, and they slowed down for us around here in Ohio a little bit."
Yeah.
So the story of this deer, I guess I want to start off by asking, like, did you know about it? Were you hunting it? Like, what's the story of this animal?
Up until the first picture I had of him on October 8th, my biggest deer on camera this year was probably 130, 140 inch 8-point. So I actually had no idea of him until, I mean, my first picture was at 8:30 in the morning on October 8th.
Wow. So there was no other camera pics before that? Just he showed up? Do you think he came in from somewhere else, or what?
After I shot him, one of the neighbors sent me pictures of him. He was actually watching that deer all summer and most of the fall. And then he said he just vanished. And I'm like, well, I know where he's at.
Yeah, absolutely. I know about you guys. I know Brian and Kevin, like for us, you know, in this area of Ohio, and I was thinking about this before it came on, and we get deer here that show up in the rut for sure. You know, they cruise in after does, and the does hold out here. So the big bucks come in after does, but then also, you know, they kind of relocate in the time period of that October lull. I know some people argue about whether that happens or not, but they seem to relocate. I know for me, every year, they vanish. You know, they vanish for a while. You can't figure out where the heck they went.
Yep. I don't get too worried about it over the summer, because it seems like it's that like that every year. They're just, those 3-year-olds are around, but then till about midway through the season or so, that's when the big ones start showing up for me.
Absolutely. What about you, Brian and Kevin? What do you guys see where you're at in your states, like as far as deer showing up and mature deer?
You know, I run cameras all year, so we're starting to get a little bit of velvet that we're seeing, because we just had deer drop. But I got 12 acres of my own, another small farm that I hunt. And it seems like on my own property, it's a gigantic doe nursery from, you know, now until they drop their fawns, and then probably until about early August. But I do have some scrapes that I run all year round that the bucks hit that I'm getting stuff of. But it's usually about end of September, October, where I start getting deer cruising through. And then we start to get a parade of different deer coming through all last week of October into November. So we get some surprises here and there, but usually with the big block that we go out and spot and everything, you pretty much have a good idea what's around. And the neighbors are pretty good. We trade a lot of pictures and everything, trying to get some plans together. So
that's cool. And yours is, Kevin, you're Southern Maryland, right? So you're a little bit later in the rut.
I'm not too Southern. Our rut typically kicks off in the first week of November.
About the same as ours.
It's about the same. I mean, it'll be a peak rut like mid-November usually.
Yeah, so. I know we've got Brian the Spy Point picked up at my dad's place this week. I got a bachelor group and one pretty thick knobs, you know, starting to form on one of them. And I kept looking. I thought he was only bucking the picture. There were like eight deer there. I kept looking. Every time I looked, there were more knobs and nubs. And I was like, hey, there's a bachelor group there. So that was kind of cool to see. I never pick one up that quick usually. I guess, Jeff, the question I have for you is like, what did you, when you saw this deer the first time, was it like your only focus at that point that last season? Or it was, like, how'd you go about it? How'd you hunt this thing?
Well, I got the first picture on the 8th, and then he was pretty consistent, like there every night, multiple times. So I waited till the first time he came close to daylight to go into the stand, which was actually October 10th, so 2 days later. And then I told my wife, I'm like, I'm taking off work early the next 2 days. He's real close to daylighting. And the 11th, I didn't see him, but I seen one of the 8, like an 8 point that I probably anybody and their brother would have shot. He was probably pushing 150. The one neighbor has one side of his sheds, but I seen him off in the distance, but I'm like, I'm not doing it. And then the next night, the 12th, is when I shot him. So I sat two times.
Wow. That's crazy. That is awesome.
How hard was it to pass up that 8-pointer? I know you had to dive inside to pass that thing up.
Well, the night I shot mine, he stood in front of me for 25 minutes, 20 yards broadside.
Oh, geez. Oh,
just tormenting you.
Holy cow. That's rough. Because that's like rolling the dice. If you don't, then you're red the rest of the season. That's tough.
Yep. I was standing there in the stand, and I just kept my fingers crossed. And I'm like, I am not reaching for that bow.
Oh, wow. That's something. Now, was he coming in to feed, or what do you think he was doing? Is that his pattern? He was coming to feed?
Yeah, most likely. I mean, there's a feeder there, but I mean, that night I had 25 deer around me. Like, not all at once, but I think the most I had 9 does there. But it was actually, I actually didn't think it was going to happen that night. I had some horrible luck, but something turned in my favor. So.
Isn't it funny when it clicks, it clicks. You go years of drought and frustrating times, you know, and then it clicks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always feel like the hunts that start off the worst are turning to be the best hunts. I always feel like, I don't know why, like every, like I like forget something, or I'll be running a little late, or
something just, weird happens.
Everything could go wrong, and it turns out to be the best hunt.
Oh, yeah. Mine definitely went wrong that night. That's for sure.
I kind of wonder if you came into, with that many does, or if you came into like scent check, you know, mess around, cruising, seeing what's up and who was hot, you know, starting to get warm.
Yeah, because, the does, they came in, it was probably about 5 o'clock roughly, something like that. And they all came in, and I got like this itch in my throat, and I kept trying to like clear my throat. And I ended up starting to choke. Like I started choking. So I just had to cough, and these does were 20 yards all around me.
Yeah.
And they all scattered. They all scattered, started blowing. And I'm like, well, my night's done. So I sat down, and then it was probably a half hour later. That's when that 8 point, that like pushing 150's 8 point came in, and 2 other 3-year-olds. And then they kind of fed off, and the one smaller 8 point, he came back and he was staring straight behind me. So I had no idea this deer was even there yet. But I mean, he was just dead staring right behind me and did not move. And I just happened to glance, look to my right, and there's like a kind of like a shrub bush tree. And I could see his left side of his rack just through the tree. And I'm like, that's him. Like, and he was at 18 yards when I first seen him.
Oh, wow. 18 yards.
Because he came in, the wind was out of the north, and he came in straight from my south behind me. And it's probably, like, the wind was blowing right at him, and the thermals were falling right towards him because it came up out of the valley. So I'm like, I don't know how that deer did not scent, like, bust me scent-wise.
That's something else. Did you have a process you use for scent control, or is it just kind of fortunate in that situation?
Well, I keep all my stuff in, like, an airtight tote, and then normally I try to take a shower, but obviously I was coming straight from work, so I didn't have time to take a shower. So I just soaked myself and sent away. I mean, just soaked myself before I go in.
Been there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sometimes you got to wing it, and sometimes it works. That's awesome. So walk us through, like, how'd it go down? Like, how the shot happened? Walk us through what happened. Man.
Well, he came into my right, and I'm left-handed, so it was perfect how he came in.
Yes.
Lefty, get off the podcast. We're shutting this thing down. How they make any left-handed bows in the world? Are there that many left-handed bows in the world?
Trust me, it is so hard to find left-handed stuff. I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah.
But he came in from my right, and he was like probably roughly 18 yards when I first seen him. And the younger buck was still facing straight at him, like in front of me. And so, I mean, I had to either now or never. So I grabbed my bow, and the little one took off, and he just kind of continued to walk straight straight towards the feeder. I mean, he was quartering like hard, quartering away. So I mean, I just drew back. He had no idea what happened. Like, no idea I was there. Not a clue in the world. I was just using the Clovis original is what I was using.
Okay.
But I mean, I stuck it right up. I just went just left of his spine and stuck it straight up in through his vitals. And I mean, he ran probably 40, 50 yards and just, he fell over. But where he fell over, I couldn't see him because he was behind two big oak trees. And I could see the Luminok, like the arrow a little bit, but that's all I could see of him. So, I mean, I was sitting in the tree. I was shaking. Like, I mean, I was shaking horrible.
Yeah.
And I ended up calling my buddy. And it's kind of funny because he shot a 190 something last year, so he could relate. But I called my buddy and I was on the phone with him and I'm like, I can't tell if he's dead or if I'm just shaking that bad because I swore the Luminok was still moving. And he's like, you're probably just shaking that bad. Because I mean, this was a half hour after I shot him still. I'm like, he's got to be dead. He's been laying there for a half hour, but it still looked like it was moving because I was shaking so bad.
Yeah. I had a funny story of a guy that I talked to recently here near Knox County, Ohio. And he's doing some concrete work for us. We actually shot a huge triple main beam buck 1 year, mm-hmm. and not too far off from here. He said he actually shot it. It went down, and he walked up to this thing, had his hands around the antler to the deer. It was still alive. Okay, it got up and took off, and they never found that deer. I was like, it's the craziest story in the world. I was like, you had your hand around the antlers. He's like, yeah. I mean, it's insane. So I. Obviously, you know, you never know. Like, you know, we talk about thousands of variables, you know, with bow hunting, the angle, the weather conditions, the broadhead you're using. And, you know, you hope, but, you know, sometimes you don't want to go chase them away. Sometimes you know you should.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's phenomenal. What a hunt. It looks like, behind you there, is that him? And is that him on the wall there?
Yep, that'd be him up there behind me. I can show him to you.
Oh, holy cow.
I mean, that's...
What mass?
I mean, that's... But got to get him in there. Yeah, that's him right there. I mean, it's
so Jeff, I was studying him on some pictures from your scoring trip you took, and I think what Toby Hughes went down to Toby and had him score him.
Yeah, I went down to Toby.
Okay, I saw like really cool characteristic. Looked like the G4 is kind of split like a muley out front. Mm-hmm. It's really cool on that deer.
Yep.
I wanted to call it a crab claw, but I was looking at the pictures like, man, that's a really cool characteristic.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's. That characteristic's down there because the one neighbor, he was all bent out of shape that I shot this one, but I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. He actually shot a 3.5-year-old that went 174 that looks pretty similar to him.
Wow.
I had that deer on camera for 2.5 months after I shot mine, and he shot it, I think, January 20th.
Super late, huh? And aren't we dropping the GPS coordinates where you hunt at the end of the podcast? Is that what everybody's saying?
Well, that's right.
It'll be like the solar eclipse in your house next year. Everybody goes to your house.
Yeah. Yep. Well, they can come to my house because it's about a half hour from my house. So
that's awesome. That sounds like an awesome hunt. And it's neat to have those deer that come in. Sometimes it's fun to mm-hmm. have like a one you pattern, and sometimes it's fun to have just what you see, you know?
Yep. Yep.
It never fails when you're trying to be quiet, so you got a tickle in your throat. I can't.
Oh, I know.
Times that happen, and then you're trying to clear it by being quiet, and it's just, then you're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that so many times, then you start choking.
Yeah. Then it becomes psychological, like your body's going to make you do it. You don't want to do it. You know?
Yeah.
You're like, I have mm-hmm. to. No, I don't want to.
Yeah, but it was funny, though. Like the first time I coughed to try, I just did one real quick cough to try and clear it. The deer just kind of looked around like it was just another deer coughing almost. But when I like had the full out coughing fit, that ended it.
Yeah. That's something else. You know, it's funny. I was looking and thinking before we had this podcast, and I was like, you know, what is it about the area of Ohio? You know, Jeff, you and I live in, why do we have, you know, really big deer in this area? And to mm-hmm. me, it's gotta be like, I think it's a combination of we're at the edge of everything. You know, like if you go north, you've got glaciated plateaus, so it's all flat and farm fields. There's no woods, okay?
Yep.
And the deers exist in these little pockets and can't grow real old. If you go too far south or near like Bryan, Pennsylvania, you get too much woods, and there's like not enough mm-hmm. crop and protein. And so I think we're right at the edge of that glaciation where you've got the terrain, where you've got the hills, the woods, the fields, the corn, the protein, the beans. And I think it's like a nice mix to grow big deer, I would think, right?
Yep, I agree. Yeah, because like all summer they got – yeah, well, that too. And all summer – like they have all the ag fields, and then as soon as the ag comes off, they can go right to the acorns.
Sure, absolutely.
Yep, but far better soil as well. With being closer to the, you know, the closer you get to the Mississippi, the better that soil gets and everything. And I know here in our area, Pennsylvania, a long time ago, a lot of it was clear cut. Some of it was strip mined. Some of it was, and they've moved, you know, earth all over the place everywhere. So that plays a huge, a huge factor as well. So
absolutely. What kind of bow setup are you using on this hunt? Yeah.
I shoot at Athens, which unfortunately they just went under, I shoot at Athens, and then I use, I obviously use the Clovis, and then I shoot Black Eagle arrows. And then I just have a Trophy Ridge React sight, cause it's easy to sight in.
Yeah. Is it the one pin or the three pin? What do you have?
It's actually the five pin, actually.
Oh, it's a five pin. Okay. Is it the digital or the non-digital?
No, it's the non. They don't make the digital for left hand.
Oh, no, oh, darn.
I looked into it. I wanted one.
Yeah.
I was going to sue them for discrimination.
Discrimination.
If Fred Bear were alive today and he wanted one, he'd be like, well, I guess no one wants to make me one since he was left-handed as well.
Just buy a right one, flip it upside down. It'll work fine.
It doesn't work. I've tried it. I've tried it.
That's great. So is this hands down the biggest deer you've shot and harvested, Jeff?
Yeah, this is hands down the biggest one I've shot. Yep. I told my wife, I'm like, what am I gonna do next year now? Like,
no doubt.
I don't know. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but there is one that is still alive down there that is almost like his twin.
Okay.
So there was three deer like that down there, and one of them I do know is still alive.
That's awesome.
So I say you look for an antlered doe.
There you go.
Antlered doe. Yeah.
I don't know if I'll find that.
130 class antlered doe. There you go.
Yeah. I'll probably be waiting a while on that one.
Were you, was it a hang on you're in or ladder or what?
I was in just a hang on. But yeah, once I started with hang ons, I've stuck with them, and I debated about going the saddle route, but then I'm like, it took me a long time to switch to a hang on. So saddle, because I'm not a big fan of heights. So
okay. I think that's my switch for this coming year. Get a hang on.
You want to switch to a hang on, you said?
Some of them are so much, they're just so much lighter than just a regular climber. And
they are.
You know, I'll do a lot of public land hunting just to go all over the place and want to be as light as possible.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree.
XOP, they have some amazing light stands. I went to their stands and they have units you put around the tree and then just slot them right down in, and the stands don't weigh too much, and they're super easy. Whenever you leave, you can just pop it right out of the thing and carry it home with you. I mean, they're wonderful. I mean,
Brian, I have a question. Is that modular, Brian? So could you have multiple brackets around multiple trees and one stand to move around? Is that how you could do that?
Yep. Okay. And then there's two straps you would have for that, and you'd hang it, put the strap around, cinch it tight on the towards the top and towards the bottom. Literally, like I said, I can hang stacking stick set and that stand in literally like 10 minutes. And they're wonderful. They're comfortable. They can adjust. I mean, they're really, someone, I forget who turned me on to them last year, because we like to do all day sits, and my son sat in one all day and I sat in one all day. He's like, that was a comfortable sit. They're not huge. They're nice and light. They are. Yeah. They're wonderful. They're really, really great. And so just to slip them on, and you ratchet the hanging system to the tree and just slide it right on. And yeah, they're wonderful. So
sounds great.
Yeah. Hang ons have come a long way.
Oh yeah. Yep. I still have one of my original Summit hang ons, and I think it's, the thing's like 25 pounds. I mean, the deck on the footing on the deck on it, it's like, I don't know, 2.5 by 3. It's a monstrosity. I don't even carry it around anymore. It's just in my basement here.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, I do a little mix. I usually do hang ons. I do have a Summit Open Shot Climber. It's an older one. I love that thing. I love having the 360 motion to turn. So I use that, you know, if I have access to a decently straight, clean tree. Sometimes, you know, with the hang ons, it's nice. You put them anywhere pretty much. I'll be honest, I don't love the climbing sticks that are separate. You have to stack on top of each other, because it seems like no matter how you do it, they're always kind of moving around and jostling and wiggling somewhere. I prefer like the straight pieces of a climbing stick that they insert in the ground and on top of each other. And the limitation is you kind of have to have somewhat of a straight, you know, climb to go up. But it seems like it's a little more safe for me to climb up and hang on to the whole thing going up with a lineman's belt around me. And then of course my dad uses ladders just because of age, and it's a little easier to get up into and safer. And I know that someday I'll be there and probably move more toward ladders than anything. But it's nice to have that mixture. You know, sometimes this with blind too. I'll throw a pop up in a field edge somewhere or whatever and give it a shot. But I think that dynamic of having a variety is pretty good depending on what deer you're hunting and conditions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So what are your plans, Jeff? You hunt turkey at all?
If I get time, right now, I mean, my daughter's in travel softball, so that kind of takes my weekends for the next couple weeks.
Gotcha.
Next couple years.
Yeah, that too.
Jeff, what Black Eagle arrows were you using?
The Zombie Slayers.
Yeah.
I've used those for probably a good 5-6 years now.
Little tidbit. I was the first person to kill something with the carnivores when they first mm-hmm. came out. And Zombie Slayers, I've killed a pile of stuff with them. Spartans are fantastic. I don't think there's an arrow that I haven't killed something with that's been lights out. They just, they're just a great arrow, a great company. I mean,
I agree.
It's wonderful.
Yep, absolutely. I agree. I haven't had any trouble with them, so.
What are your thoughts
They will take a beating.
What are your thoughts on trail cams, Jeff? What do you do for like season scouting? Is there anything you do as a plan?
I usually just try to find those scrapes and like trail. Like I don't go into the timber. I'm a firm believer. I stay out of the timber as much as I can. And I just pretty much hang everything on field edges, wood edges, inside corners. Like that's what I've always had good luck on. And then like once, if I know there's like a big community scrape, I'll obviously throw one there, but I just try to stay out of the timber as much as I can. And it seemed to have worked for me. So, cause I think I've killed one buck in the timber besides this one. So I guess two. I have, how many do I have on the wall? 6 or 7 on the wall now. And all of them been on field edges, except for two.
Yeah.
Which that one nice. Hit him, I don't really consider in the timber because I was only 20 yards in it. So, I mean, I was technically still on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have any questions for Jeff?
What did he officially score again?
He officially went 181 5/8.
Nice.
I've seen that.
And that was through Buckmasters?
Yeah, that was through Buckmasters.
Nice.
How do you feel about that scoring system, nice. Jeff? Because I'll tell you what, I like Buckmasters. I know I'm a big proponent of what Toby talks about. Why are we deducting inches from a deer because it's a regular? It's a freaking natural evolutionary thing. Why would you deduct it from not being perfect symmetric? That makes sense to me.
I don't know. I've always wondered the same thing. I mean, I did get him scored by Ohio Big Buck just to see what he would do. Mm-hmm. And they had him at 175. So, I mean, he didn't lose a whole lot. Because he went non-typical, but like if they would have put him typical, that deer would have got demolished.
Right.
Because that's like I'm sure you've seen the buck that went from Ashland County up north.
Yes.
I actually had pictures of that deer last year up by my house. So I was hunting him as well, and I actually am real good friends with the guy that shot him. And like when he told me the score of that, and then what Buckmasters Ohio Big Buck had him at, I was like. I was in complete shock that deer went that low.
That difference that score. Yeah, I don't understand. I'm sure, Kevin, are you familiar with how that's done?
Not like really, no.
Pope and Young, typical. It's like, you know, from left to right side, if you have any variation in a typical score, it becomes a deduction at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to get into the intricacies of the scoring thing because I'm not that into the score of a deer when it comes to like, oh, it's an eighth of an inch here and there, whatever. I just think it's cool to look at a deer and how big it is and go, hey, that's a 181. Then my mind could go, oh, okay. You know, it helps to form how big that deer is. But also, like, I know, Jeff, you're the left main beam in that deer has some serious mass. And I know the buck my wife shot, like, this year, he's a mainframe 8-point, but, like, the mass on the thing is, like, way bigger than most deer I've ever seen. And it's incredible what that mass does to your score, like circumference measurements to up that score.
Oh, yeah. Bit. Yeah, because between his G2, it was a G2 and G3. Yeah, G2 and G3, it was like 6 5/8 around in mass on that deer.
Yeah, originally it went on with, they were looking at perfection. That's what they were looking for, was so perfection.
Symmetry, right?
And symmetry, yeah. Okay. And so that's why you get like, for Pope and Young, unless it has 15 inches of non-typical growth, it's going to be categorized as a typical. The minute you break that 15 inches, it can go non-typical. And then therefore those get in. The main club I score for, Northeast Big Buck Club, we don't do deductions at all. And if your deer has a 1 1/8 inch kicker off one of the tines and you want it scored into the non-typical category, you can do that. We count everything. Like I scored for Buckmasters as well. When you have your perfect, semi-irregular, and all these different ones, and that's off a percentage of, you know, what is the percentage of run to growth based off of those different things. So yeah, originally when they were doing it, they were looking for, you know, just perfection, but they knew there were lots of non-typical deer out there. You know, Pennsylvania big game records, you have to have 10 inches of non-typical growth for it to go into there. So every different one has, you know, their makeup or whatever they, sure, they do. Yeah. You do score the entire, you do score everything. Some groups take away, some groups just leave it there. You know, when you're looking at Buckmasters, you're really true looking at, you know, true bone, and then they'll throw the spread and stuff in there as well. So there, it gets crazy. And, you know, mass is a big determining thing. You get four mass measurements, regardless if you have a spike on one side, you still get four mass measurements. You find the middle and measure it and times it by four. You know, so they try to keep it, you know, as equitable as possible. But again, yeah, most of the people will tell you, you know, deduction, nets are for fish. You know, this is 174 net. Okay, well, what it grows. Yeah. Well, 196. Well, that there's a huge difference. And mm-hmm. yeah, and the placement of where tines are, whether it's, you know, coming out, like I thought I saw on the right side, there was a tine coming out of the G4, G5 on your buck, and it's coming out, you know, towards, you know, here's the main beam, and it comes out. Yes, maybe I didn't see it right over, but yep. You know, and you got shared points. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of reading and a lot of stuff, and you learn a lot as you score more deer. And mm-hmm. There's, I guess, a negative in possibly anything you want to do and
sure.
say, but
exactly,
you know. But they're all out there, you know. And again, I always tell people, regardless of what it scored, it doesn't take away from the memory that you have, the emotion you have, you know, from doing it, all the stuff with the hunt, you know, who you shared it with, all it in the end, it's like your age. It's just a number.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Really, it's just a number.
You think so, the coolest part too, yeah. like what you said, Brian, the memory of it, I always go back to that because, like, you know, we're not all getting any younger. So mm-hmm. when all of us are, you know, pushing 85, 90 years old, we make it that long, we hope to have that deer in the wall up there. I'm going to remember that hunt and that memory that I can't do anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I think, you know, you guys can all agree with, that's what we're after, is that memory. It's not even the physical deer. It's just the memory of that hunt that's going to stay with us for life, because we have one life to live, and it's going to be awesome to be able to remember that. But I agree with you, Brian, the symmetry is kind of cool when it comes to scoring. I respect people that like the perfect symmetry on both sides and the time length and the row, you know, row tines, so to speak. But I think now in my life, like where I'm from in Ohio, Jeff, we're used to seeing, usually growing up on a farm in Killbuck, pretty much typicals, you know, pretty most of our deer were typicals. Like I said, the one my wife shot this year was like just a freak non-typical I've never seen before. I saw probably the first buck I ever hunted was just a massive buck. The thing had so much mass that in between the tines, it was webbed. Like, it was insane amount of mass in that mm-hmm. buck. And then sometimes mm-hmm. you'll see, I like the flyers, you know, the drops, the kickers, the split brows like yours has, you know. I love characters. So, like, when I see a non-typical now, like, my hope is, since I've never shot one before, I hope I get a chance at a decent non-typical sometime. Like,
yeah. mm-hmm.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, it's like the one thing I want to have on the wall eventually is something with a drop tine. Because, I mean, I don't have a drop tine.
Well, let's just share. You can have my wife's buck in the wall half a year. We'll take your buck. We'll flip flop. You know, we'll just mix and match, right?
That's funny.
Because I haven't shot a drop tine yet either. So I told her she has to quit hunting.
That's funny.
I have one.
Jet Brian's got one. We can just rotate then. The trifecta.
Yeah, it's not very. It's about close to 2-inch drop tine. But the only reason he had it is he has a blowfly hole on the bottom. And it caused the main beam to grow up, and he's got a drop at the very end. And it's not even drop, it goes out horizontally. But I mean, because of where the main beam is, it's on the bottom, it's considered a drop.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
I have one.
That's so, one more than me.
I don't have a drop.
Kevin's waiting on his too. So I'm like, Kevin, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I know there is a guy in Loudonville, Jeff, and I don't know his name, but I've seen the deer. He shot a deer probably, oh, I don't know, 8-10 years ago now, quadruple drop tines. I had four.
Oh.
It was, I think, shotgun deer. And I think one of the kids I had in school missed it with a bow. I won't bring that up because he'll listen to this and get sour later on me. But yeah, another guy shot it later with a shotgun, I think during shotgun season, but four drop tines on that. And just, you know, super cool to see deer with that kind of character.
Yeah, I shot some deer with character and everything with a bunch of kickers, and but never, not with a drop tine yet.
Yeah.
You got a good enough taxidermist. You can put six drop tines on here if you want. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. You really want to.
Little Play-Doh and super glue, baby.
Listen,
yeah, I mean,
that's all you need.
I mean, it's not a tough thing. They can do it pretty well.
Yep. I'll tell you what. I want to thank Jeff for coming on tonight for episode 10 of the Reinventing the Hunt podcast. It's been a lot of fun talking to you about the story. We want to wish you the best this next season coming up here, and have you back on sometime when you shoot an even bigger one. I'm sure you will out there. And we're happy to have anybody on that has a great deer story, and just we want to hear your stories and, you know, how you hunted these deer out there and what you chased down. And next week, we're going to take a little bit of a turn. We're going to change up a bit and start talking about some mineral and feed and maybe some wild turkey and morel hunting. So kind of move away from the deer a little bit. And I know I haven't been out yet to do some morel hunting, but a lot of people are finding them here in Ohio right now. So I need to get out there with the kids and rush them up for some frying. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Hope you all have a great
good
night.
Good job.
All right. Like, share, and give us a review.